web-based technology. But well, maybe I should speak into the
mic. Yeah,
you should.
This is radio.
So you had begun the discussion in relation to web-based technology and fiber optics. And, you know, I was also interested in thinking about older forms and still continuing forms of analog communication as well, since we are in a radio lab here. And because for me, I'm very interested in not only using the web as a communicatory tool, but also looking to these older forms, which is radio, right? And at this point, you know, the FCC has allowed for more consolidation, which means less space for community-based radio practices, less space for, and sort of tightening down on the possibilities of low power FM broadcast as well. And I thought maybe you would want to speak a little bit about that, and we can come back and enter the conversation as well.
Can you tell us a bit about pirate radio?
Well, there still is. The question was, can you tell us a little bit about pirate radio in the U.S. and the state of it right now? Well, there are a lot of low-power FM broadcasting going on throughout the country. Some of it is hidden, a little bit more hidden than others. Some of them, you know, have been shut down in recent years by the FCC. You know, there are groups like ourselves, Neurotransmitter, who are a group of artists working with radio technology. But we are doing that, you know, on a performance basis. It's not a regular radio broadcast. I think, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of pirate stations have also incorporated net broadcast as well, and they continue to work. They continue to work through the airwaves also, but it's not as advertised as frequently. And obviously, I'm not going to talk about, you know, or name names, because we are on net broadcast right now. So if someone out there is listening, it's probably not a good idea to, or at least give location of that as well. But I think that, you know, there still is the, there's still a movement of pirate radio in the U.S. As well as elsewhere, and there is a network of pirate radio activists. I don't know if we use the term pirate radio so frequently any longer. It's more mini FM or low power FM as well. I mean, pirate is a nice term though, but I think it's also a kind of dated term. And, you know, there's a movement of radio activists and artists who, you know, are trying to find ways and avenues of occupying the airwaves, or finding spaces or fissures, you know, on the radio dial to communicate and to broadcast as well. I know I'm speaking a little bit generally, but perhaps you'd like to speak about that. Or if anyone else.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, obsolescent technologies and obsolescent forms are ignored. They're one of the spaces of freedom, spaces for free play or play forms, because they're ignored by the bureaucracy. The radio doesn't matter as much as television or as much as the web. So what I'm wondering, my question for you is, why would you say that? Why is the FCC giving radio so much attention? Why are they cracking down and tightening up?
Yeah, maybe I can answer that a little bit. There's what's called satellite radio, and it's radio, but you know, via satellite. And the idea with satellite radio is that you can be driving from New York City to California to Los Angeles and have the same radio station playing. So what happens is a lot of what Valerie was saying is a lot of the local, more community-based stuff isn't being heard, isn't being recognized. So that has a lot to do, you know, with this, you know, the ideas around regulation and consolidation.
So maybe what you're indicating, you just mentioned the car, and the car is one of the last places that the radio owns, right? You can't have a television, you can't have the web. Maybe that's it, because we're really a driving nation.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. But I still feel that a lot of people receive their information via the radio. When I wake up in the morning, the first thing that comes up or the thing that wakes me up is my alarm clock radio. So radio is still very important for me, as it is for other people. And, you know, there's like, because it is it is an older medium, you know, companies are trying to find new ways of igniting, you know, this old tool, you know, vis-a-vis satellite radio. So trying to make it hip, you know, in the age of bit streams.
Just a question also. I think you told me, isn't it right, that now they're selling a lot of the airwaves basically for cell phone companies, so they want to actually keep them open and not for local radio use because they have to be used for cell phones. So there's a clear economical incentive involved in what the FCC is doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the reasons why, you know, back in like the 20s when you know, radio was free form, I mean, a lot of people were broadcasting from their bedrooms, and then I believe in 1924 the Radio Communication Act was passed, and that because they passed it because of, you know, they didn't want people to interfere with military or commercial uses of the technology. And Ricardo, maybe you know a little bit more about this.
I think maybe we should all gather around the microphone. But just last week, the Next Wave dispute was settled. The Next Wave was a cell phone company that bought up a ton of frequency, and that's their major asset. And it was holding up the frequencies because it hadn't been figured out how they would be allocated until the government settled with Next Wave, which happened last week, and there was something like $7 billion. Next Wave suddenly its assets went up to $7 billion due to having their frequencies, but they also gave up a great deal of frequencies, which are primarily going to AT&T and Verizon. So here we see once again that the way that the settlement has come about, which the government says, well, this is really for the best of all, especially for the phone users. You know, your phone tends to be, lots of times you're trying to call somebody, but it's clogged and your call isn't going through. Well, that's less likely to happen now because of the opening of these frequencies by the settlement. However, it's been settled that it's the major providers who are going to get a lot of the primary space. So just to answer the question that came up about Next Wave, we also brought in a number of packets, and there's one specifically New York Times story covering the Next Wave settlement that's available for you guys. Unless there's more discussion, okay.
To go back to your question as well, you know, right now with deregulation, you know, basically it was just passed that media outlets can own 39% of media space in a particular market, right? And so, you know, like this was done because Fox and initially they had asked for 45% because it was 35% in a market, and Fox. But they, you know, in a sense, we the people won a bit, right? Because it was only changed to 4% above what it was initially, and that was because actually Fox and Viacom were breaking the law, so they were at 39% ownership, and I think that right now or in 2000 there was legislation or possible legislation for licensing of low power FM once again, 10 watts or less, because that was stopped in the 70s. There was, you know, there were low power FM possibilities before that, and now it's only available for schools and, you know, less for community groups. There are possibility of that happening again, but I think, you know, I think it's really the FCC is cracking down on these pirate stations, if you want to call them that, or low power stations, primarily because, you know, of the fear of these, you know, the possibility of these types of stations. You know, there was a radio station called Steal This Radio on the Lower East Side that, you know, went through litigation for years and had all of their equipment completely trashed a few years back. And then there was also another radio station called the East Village Radio, which, you know, broadcast within a three-block radius in the East Village. And the nice thing about that, and this is where our interests come in as well, is that, you know, it's a very local, low-power radio, you know, so it's created for the community. So there's a relationship that's built between between those who are transmitting and those who are listening. And oftentimes those who are listening are also participating and become producers in some respect. And I think and it's really unfortunate that, you know, there's this move towards this larger deregulation and also and consolidation, in that, you know, those voices end up being being sort of quashed in this situation. So now the East Village Radio has become an internet station only, which is nice in some respects because it becomes more global. You know, those who are in Amsterdam can listen as well. But I think, you know, there is still an importance of, you know, creating a radio that is very local and specific to a community and to a particular public. Yeah.
Yeah, the question is about the effectivity of what you're doing and how you see it on which level in relation to collaboration, cooperation, or with others, like your audience, and how do you think you're thinking of going through.
I'll start the answer, and then if you want to continue with it, for a neurotransmitter, our interest is really working with very local, low-power broadcast, and so and we create these performances through mobile broadcast. So we have a mobile radio transmitter backpack that we've created, and are in the process of making a few others of these backpacks, which will then eventually build a larger broadcast range. And these transmitters actually work within the kind of legal broadcast the FCC regulations, because you can actually use a transmitter that broadcasts, you know, up to 500 yards radius, right? You know, and those transmitters are used primarily for a business situation, you know, where you're talking to the people who are working, you know, within a particular building, and you use this type of transmission device. Anyway. Our interest is, you know, this idea of taking radio transmission out on the street, and creating a relationship between the transmitter and the listener, and this is through some sort of performance. So oftentimes the listener is performing with us through, you know, through carrying their own radios, you know, and sometimes they end up defining the frequency range as well of what we're broadcasting, you know, because sometimes they can move in and out of that, and that also relates to the performance and affects the performance. But the other thing that we're considering in relation to to this backpack, the community port, is that, you know, it has this possibility also for use within political demonstration, right? Different mass mobilizations as well, because radios are so cheap. You know, the radio that Angel's holding right there costs about, that one costs $1 and at a thrift store. And so, right. So, you know, you can buy a transistor radio for up to $8. And so if the situation calls for it, you know, we could ask a number of people to, you know, go to a demonstration and bring a bunch of radios with them and then, you know, create this kind of sonic intervention as well, or use it as a communicatory tool. You know, if there's a problem at one end of the protest march, you know, one can be contacted. Well, if we're using multiple backpacks, that that creates a broader transmission range as well.
Just to get back to your question is, I guess, you know, the main thing, and going back to what Christian Slater was saying in Pump Up the Volume, is that, you know, we have to use these tools and make it our own, you know, reclaim the space, so to speak. And as far as the audience, I mean, right now we're, you know, our audience is you guys, but it's also the world, you know, because we're on the web, so, you know. But, yeah, outside of, like, these performance-based projects, we've also done radio, like, installation-based projects, converting objects into radios. You can go to our website. It's neurotransmitter.fm, and check out our other stuff. Ricardo's done some radio projects also in the past. Maybe you can speak a little bit about what you've done.
I mean, it's funny because initially we weren't planning on turning this into a traditional panel format, and it seems to be that's what's happening a little bit here, because we brought all of these sound sources and radio broadcasts and you know, popular cultural representations of radio, as you saw in the video as well, and thinking about, you know, the history of the medium and also you know, the different types of possibilities for it as well. So, but then it ends up, you know, becoming a discussion about, you know, what it is that we do instead of what's existing here in the space, you know, for all of you to partake in as well. But why don't you talk a little bit about what you do, and then we can, you know,
okay, open it up.
Yeah.
I don't think I share the same idealism as Neurotransmitter, but because I'm just going to bring up one video and mute it, which is just documentation. But actually, it's not. Okay. This is one project from last October in City Hall Park, and I just took a regular shopping cart and turned it into a mobile radio station that was transmitting via FM as well as online using the nodes available in City Hall Park and also through speakers. But the idea was more of a symbolic act. Although it was a functioning radio and people, it was targeting pedestrians, but pedestrians at moments, it's sort of, I think an interesting idea came up about yesterday. Irene, I think you may have brought up something about the lack of time in your session. How people, a lot of people don't have much time or the freedom for creative thinking or, you know, letting their imagination flow because of working and all the economic hindrances and so forth. So the idea that I wanted to play with is using what windows of time are available, such as the lunchtime. People in Lower Manhattan will use City Hall Park to go out and have their lunch and enjoy the sun, or tourist time. And tourist time has sort of been taken over by entertainment and not sort of engaging in creative thinking or, you know, it's more so go to location A and have some passive entertainment. So so this cart was presented on a Friday and Saturday. On a Friday, I used primarily the lunchtime to invite people to come and use the cart and sort of just broadcast. And on Saturday, I targeted tourists. And sure enough, in New York, it seems like people are really hungrier, ready for public art and ready to just engage. So it the whole thing, the entire time, it was driven around all over the park, and people were broadcasting. But what I wanted to do is sort of just bring up the idea that the media is supposed to be for the people. It's supposed to serve us. It's not supposed to sort of feed us or tell us what we want or create our desires, but it's supposed to serve us. And that whole idea has been co-opted. So it was more, although it functioned, it was more of a symbolic act just to bring up that idea that, hey, wait a minute, we should be able to take it over, just as what's his name said in the movie. So at this point, I think we should probably open it up. Oh, is it not? There's. What's that?
No,
it's just. Well, what we have. Okay. Yeah.
But why? So, but that's quite idealistic. What you've just said. I mean, I think even more idealistic. I think, you know, there's a little bit more idealism in what you're saying than what we are. You know, it's more that because I think, you know, we're thinking of it more as right a tactical tool, right? And
yeah.
And I think. And I don't know if there's an idealism in that or more so than a necessity, perhaps, you know.
Where's the realism in what you just talked about?
For me, the realism is using these windows of time to get people's attention and have them consider, you know, a different source of media, themselves as a source of media. I guess the reason I said you guys are more idealistic is because you're prepared to, whereas mine might be a one-time action, or it might happen again when I feel compelled to, or put it out there and have the energy and I'm not too lazy. You guys are prepared to set up these backpacks and distribute them in protests, or, you know, do it in a more formulated way and make sure that it's actually used. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm more just sort of trying to find a way into that imagination space and see how an odd tableau, such as a shopping cart made into a radio station, can sort of trigger some thinking. So I guess we're both ideal. Yeah.
No, I do think that, you know, if this object functions, right, as a mobile radio station, that there is a possibility of that continued use, right? So why not, you know, go out there on a number of days and take your cart out on the street and have people, you know, interact with it or play around with it as well.
At the same time, I think public art is a pain in the ass. But, yeah.
All right.
I had one question for Brian.
Don't leave.
Yeah, you don't get off so easy, Brian. No, it's a shame that Trevor's gone, because it kind of applied to what he was saying in terms of, like, having practical sort of examples of different kinds of cooperations or free cooperations models. And I've been thinking a lot about sort of revolution and representations of revolution, or discussions around revolution, or the concepts, thinking, rethinking revolution. And a lot of your discussion around this sort of representation, or thinking about the image of resistance or the multitude, is quite interesting for me, because I think I do think it's important to think about the imaginary. Nevertheless, what's interesting also is how would one begin to sort of begin the approach towards this imaginary? And I'm wondering about your process at arriving at the image that you were working with, which was the Leviathan, or thinking in relation to monsters, because that's I think it's a kind of real question for artists today, is to work with images of protest and resistance, and how one could do that in a way that wouldn't sort of succumb to the same lack of depth or trivialization that sort of word like revolution has taken on in contemporary culture, or the way, yeah, co-optation, I don't know.
Because because now you can have your own banking revolution, right? You know, as they say. So, so the term has completely shifted meaning.
I mean, there are so many things that go into the those processes that it's kind of hard to sum it up. I mean, I'm quite interested in the possibility of letting myself drift a little bit, because I've spent years really studying hard the political economy and trying to figure out how it works, and trying to figure out how it's how it works through the representational system, you know, that is to say the technologies, and how those how what I call a semiotic economy has evolved. And this kind of analytical work is a collective project, right? I mean, by collective, it's beyond any specific collective. I think it was maybe the big intellectual project of the 1990s, really. And the result of that, among others, has been further intellectual projects like the journal that I work with in Paris, which is called Multitude, you know, Multitudes. And what we are trying to do there is to try and also think, conceive, and also struggle for a political economy that would make another use of all these representational systems increasingly more possible. And I don't mean just the electronic ones, but also the theatrical ones, also the all the different spectrum of culture, you know, leading down to the educational systems, and to the difference that should be made possible is for expression and development of people in their singularity rather than in the way that they become normalized, channeled, the way that they are sort of offered models to which there's every encouragement to conform in a very systemic way, you know, that runs from the people who monitor your credit card use to the way that you sort of achieve value for your products on a certain kind of market to the different kind of pressures that your various investments in your home and your working place and all that are really configured for you, you know. So at the I think there's a tremendous amount of specificity that is part of change, and yet is there a place for this more cut loose sort of imaginary of revolution? In my opinion, there is, because each time that imaginary has given body to events, which are urban events, you know, and events of protest and so on, I've always seen it gives a further push to the more extended and long-term projects that involve not only intellectual analysis, but also legislation and, of course, social movements, the relation to political parties, and then legislation, right, you know? And these are all extremely collective sort of projects. And how you bridge the gap between those things that are operating more or less with more or less success, usually less, right, in Europe and the United States, for me, it's a question. I mean, I don't really know. You know, I think this society has become so intensely controlled now that it is kind of strange, you know, to know exactly what to do. And how to position yourself? Do you just try and develop those little tiny little spaces like it? You know, the FM radio. You know, we have an FM radio called Fréquence Paris Pluriel. You know, it's as insignificant as most alternative FM radios, but it does cover the entire city of Paris. You know, it doesn't cover three blocks. You know, I mean, do you fit into those three blocks? You know, really, or what? I don't really know. I mean, it seems to me that the only way to kick off the pressure in the world of this American system is to really oppose it. I don't see where. Otherwise, I think it's gonna shrink down to 3 inches. You're gonna have 3 inches of space around your body, and when you try to stick your tongue out, it's gonna get cut off.
Does anyone else have any questions, comments? You want to play? Let's play.